Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
It's time for Politics by Night. We do this every Tuesday, where we just chat a bit of politics with someone from the political gallery, take our time and make it as unadversarial as we can and try to learn something about the political environment and things that have been happening lately. This evening, I am delighted to welcome along Dan Brunskill from interest.co.nz. Kia ora to you, Dan.
Kia ora, Emil. How are you doing?
I am doing just great. Before we get to the politics, who did you bring and what did you wear to your seventh form ball, please?
you've stumbled on a story there, actually.
Oh, okay. All right.
What I wore was a mismatched op shop, not even a suit, just a collection of formal seeming items that nice. I had scavenged from an op shop. Uh-huh. And who I bought was another of my homeschooled friends whom had not been invited to a ball for obvious reasons.
Cool. And what did you do? Did you stand around awkwardly wondering what to do?
Well, once we got inside, yes. You'll see we weren't, strictly speaking, invited at all.
So you crashed a ball?
Yeah, we crashed a ball. I'm actually looking at a photo right now because I heard your last interview and I heard you ask that question. I thought I'd better prepare. And I am wearing what I would describe as one of the worst formal outfits I've seen in my life.
That's great. And you didn't get busted. You just kind of rolled around.
No, we didn't get busted. In fact, it was so successful that we decided to do it again at another friend's ball. The first one, I'm from Hamilton. The first one was the Dio school ball, uh-huh. class of 2013, if anyone's out there.
Okay.
It went very well. And we snuck, it was in a two-level venue. And we snuck in the top level and then walked down the stairs to where the event actually was. There was a security guard at the bottom of the stairs. We thought we were busted. He turned around and said, "Oi, you guys aren't allowed in there. Get back inside." I said, and we had a great time. We knew a few people would be at that ball, so we just went out to them and said, "Hey, we're here," and just hung out for, I don't know, half an hour and went home. It was super fun. But then we tried it again at the Te Ao Mutu ball, where we also had friends. Similar approach, where we entered through a side room and tried to sort of blend in once we were inside. But Te Ao Mutu took its security seriously.
Yeah, right.
Seriously. Yeah. And we were spotted by some teachers who smelt a rat. And they called the police,
right.
And we got a moderate amount of trouble, or a moderate warning, I should say.
Yeah, a medium readdressing down. Nice.
And we decided one success, one failure. That was enough of a career for us, and we moved on with our life.
Nice. Hey, well, Lifetime Achievement Award. Well done. That was a good story. I wasn't expecting that, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. All right, we've got about 10 minutes to talk politics, because we do have some quizzes who are going to come on at the end of the hour. And you have just been in Southeast Asia, travelling across Southeast Asia, along with the Prime Minister and some gallery journalists and a business delegation. First of all, where did you go, and what was the overall point of this?
Yeah, well, we went to Singapore, Thailand, and the Philippines. And the overall point is basically that they're strategically relevant countries for us, and also that they had time in their schedules to meet with the new prime minister. One of the truths about these things, it is just sometimes about scheduling where you go and who you visit. So there are six countries that IMFET have identified in Southeast Asia as being sort of important to New Zealand's future of foreign policy, and these were the three that were available to meet. Basically the thinking is that the world is changing quite a lot. I'm sure everyone has noticed that. Mm. And these countries in Southeast Asia tick off three pretty key boxes for New Zealand. They're close to us. They have a fast-growing middle class, basically people who are rich enough to buy expensive New Zealand products.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of geographically significant for this great US-China, what they call strategic power competition. which is a code word they use. So it's significant for sort of Western security. And we traditionally haven't had super close relationships with these countries, and they're sort of becoming increasingly important to our national interests.
Right.
So there's going to be a new focus on all those Southeast Asian countries.
There's ground to be gained, indeed. All right, so let's look at the Prime Minister, a big overseas trip where he is sort of front and centre and sort of advertising the country, I suppose. How did you assess his diplomatic performance?
It's interesting, isn't it? I think he did quite well, but I feel like a lot of the commentary when he came in was that he might be something of a, you know, mean to say, but a downgrade from Jacinda Ardern, who was sort of a superstar, and even Key before him, who really actually did pretty well on the world stage. But I think he actually thrived to a certain degree. He's very warm and personable and very good at building relationships. And with these leaders he was meeting, he was very he was very warm. He was almost too warm at times. He'd sort of go in for the handshake and then rub their arm, and while they're walking along inspecting the guard, he'd sort of put his arm on their shoulder, and he was chatting to the Prime Minister of Thailand with somebody at an event. You know, there's sort of a meet and greet where people were showing off local products, and one of them had painted the Prime Minister of Thailand on a plate, and they were showing that to Luxor, and he sort of says, "Ah, he's a handsome guy, isn't he? He could be a model, this guy." He kind of flaps him on his arm. I think to a New Zealander, sometimes that sort of stuff might seem a bit, young people would say cringe or too enthusiastic, but it kind of seems to work. It really builds relationships, and you really got the sense that these leaders sort of liked each other and were bonding. And one thing we've seen is that kind of personal relationship, leader to leader, while it's old-fashioned, can actually be really quite influential. It was something Key did really good at. Key made friends with Obama and sort of President Xi and even the Japanese Prime Minister who passed recently, Shinzo Abe. They kind of just were friends, and it kind of opened doors for New Zealand. And it seems to me like Luxon has learned that, and he's trying to sort of emulate that, and it kind of seemed to be working in these three countries at least.
I suppose it plays into his skill set in a way. He would be a man, given his corporate background and the fact that he's worked around the world as well, who is used to talking to high-powered people from different cultural backgrounds, which is not necessarily a skill that you should take for granted.
No. I think he really thrived, and he's also worked quite a lot in these regions. He talked a lot about how he spent time in Singapore and in the Philippines in particular, both places he has worked professionally, and actually seems to understand quite well. So I'm kind of come back from this trip wondering if we, or you know, the I don't know who we is there, but whether people may have underestimated his diplomatic abilities a little bit.
Now, I mentioned earlier that a business delegation accompanied the Prime Minister on this trip, and there was an interesting moment that I think you broke the story on. He took a bit of heat from one of that delegation, Dan.
Yeah, it was quite a surprising moment. We were having a lunch sort of late in the trip, sort of before, in Thailand before we went on to the Philippines, and they just invited two people to get up and just give some reflections about the trip so far. And one of them, got up and he said multiple things, about how to do, business better and a few thoughts. But he did give one fairly big serve, I thought, to the Prime Minister. He sort of criticised him for using certain phrases that he felt, that could potentially imply negative things about the previous administration. So in Luxon's sort of generic stump speech that he would give at each little event, he would sort of say, New Zealand is under new management and it's open for business, is kind of his line, which is a line we're very familiar with here in New Zealand.
Yeah. It was one of the sort of lead up to the election lines, wasn't it? You know, we need new management. We need to reopen for business, which I suppose works in an intra-country election where everybody knows what you're talking about. But when you are a business person with international relationships, maybe that sends the wrong message.
Yeah, that very much seemed to be what he was saying, is that some of us are new to these markets, but some of us have been here for ages and we've been building relationships for ages, and we've been doing it under the previous government and the government before that. And what we want to project when we come, I mean, I'm kind of editorialising here a little bit, he didn't say these words, but perhaps what he was thinking was that, you know, we want to project stability and say New Zealand is always open for business, and New Zealand is always a good person to trade with, and that's not going to change at the next election. I think that's quite an important part. I was thinking about Singapore. While we were there, the Prime Minister of Singapore announced he would step down, and the person who will replace him will only be the fourth Prime Minister ever.
Right. Well, Lee Kuan Yew was the Prime Minister there for so long, wasn't he? Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So I think this exporter potentially felt that saying negative things about you know, or even implying negative things sort of raised the idea of political risk in people's minds, and perhaps it sort of implied a question being out there is we're open for business, but will the next government be? What about in the election that's only ever 3 years away? Right. So, yeah, and the Prime Minister, we asked him about it, of course, and he sort of seemingly kind of pushed back on it and said, well, we are under new management, we are open to business, and we are doing something different. But I did note he didn't use that phrase again in the remainder of the trip. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, he pushed back. On the other hand, he did seem to take the feedback on board.
Were there specific areas that were the focus, particularly from the business delegation's point of view, or was it all reasonably sort of general and broad brush?
It's quite general. The business delegation, they all go over there with their own particular interests,
yeah,
and they're selected because they are working on something in that region. So often they are talking to an investor, say in Singapore, for example. A lot of them went just to be on the Singapore leg, and then they held a big gala dinner at which everyone got to invite their business contacts, their investors, their whomever. And then the Prime Minister would come over to their table and you know, shake their hands and take a photo. And it was kind of a draw card, I guess, to these businesses to say to their investors or their business partners or whomever they're talking to in the country, come to our event and meet our Prime Minister and see how what a big deal we are and why you should do business with us. Mm. So there are a wide range of businesses. Probably the one strong theme was renewable energy. Yeah. There was a carbon credit business. There was a renewable energy investor. There were some people doing some sort of clean tech, like a clean concrete company, and someone using forestry waste to make chemicals, that kind of thing. There was quite a lot of that emphasis.
And was the focus there from these countries' point of view on they can give things to help us, or is it more sort of leveraging our experience and expertise in these kinds of areas? Because we're pretty far along in terms of renewable energy and yes, in transitioning, right?
Yeah, so it's an interesting trade relationship in some ways, because we don't want to buy too much from the region. We're a really small country, so sort of having access to our market to sell their products, I mean, it's a nice to have, but we can only buy so many things. So what we can offer them is much more stuff like our capital, our money, or our expertise. This is particularly Thailand and Philippines. Obviously, Singapore is a wealthy country. So they're quite keen for us to collaborate with them on renewable energy type stuff, particularly Thailand and the Philippines. They are both super keen to decarbonize, very hungry for it. They know that it's critical for attracting manufacturing investment. Yeah, yeah. Big manufacturers won't set up if they're using too dirty energy, and currently they're using a lot of coal and natural gas. They're really keen to get into renewables, and also for energy security reasons. Singapore, for example, you know, imports a lot of energy. They would like to do more themselves. So that's something we can kind of offer them that isn't market access. So, yeah, that was quite a big focus. And the Prime Minister likes to talk about it a lot, which is kind of a little bit interesting considering some of the stuff they're doing at home. They're big on renewable energies, but they're also open to exploring for fossil fuels. He didn't talk about that when we were overseas.
No, indeed, I can imagine. It'll be fascinating to see what comes of this. Dan Brunskill from interest.co.nz, thanks very much for your
time. Thank you for having me.
I'd love to see a photo of that suit too.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.